Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Mike Drosch joins us today from Boston. Mike is a partner at Bessemer Venture Partners, where he focuses on investments in supply chain software, B2B marketplaces, enterprise SaaS, and cybersecurity. Mike started his career as a systems engineer in the maritime industry before transitioning to a management consulting role at Navigant, focused on emerging energy technologies and infrastructure. After working with multiple BVP companies during business school, Mike joined Bessemer Venture Partners formally as an investor in 2017. Mike has led investments in Tackle.io, Optimal Dynamics, Raft, and Cargo.one. Mike, welcome to the Heavy Hitters. I'm excited to bring all of our offline supply chain conversations onto the show. Welcome.
Thanks, Ty. Really glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, I gave a very short snippet in my introduction, but give us more of that color commentary on the path that led you to being a partner at Bessemer.
Yeah, so pre-Bessemer, you know, I have a background in engineering and consulting, and my first job, of all places, was working as a system engineer in a boutique naval architecture firm, where we were focused on design and engineering work for commercial maritime vessels. So, you know, a very interesting experience. A lot of time spent deep in the bowels of tugboats and barges and things like that. Then I moved over to Navigant, and I was in a consulting role in our emerging energy technologies practice. And that was during the first venture clean tech boom. And so I was spending a lot of time evaluating really innovative venture-backed companies. And this was really my first exposure to venture in general. And I just became fascinated with the industry and the incredible founders that were building these innovative companies. And so I ended up jumping in with both feet, working first for a few Bessemer-backed enterprise software companies. And then I was fortunate enough to join BVP full-time on the investment team a little over 5 years ago.
Love it. Well, you know, call it the tugboat systems engineering DNA. We're going to talk about supply chain today. So I like the segue, and I actually have a systems engineering play to run by you. So don't let me forget. But that aside, let's set the stage for the listeners. Tell us a little bit more about Bessemer Venture Partners generally, your team within what is a portfolio of teams at BVP, and more about those investment areas you mentioned that you focus on.
Sure. So Bessemer is one of the longest standing global venture capital firms. We're currently investing out of a multi-billion dollar fund, and we truly invested at every stage from seed to growth. And I think what really differentiates us is that we try to organize ourselves and our investment teams around specific investment theses rather than stage or geography. And we spend a lot of time doing our research and developing a thesis or roadmap, as we call it internally, on a given sector before we start investing. And so hopefully the idea being that this not only makes us better investors and better able to spot interesting trends a little bit earlier, but also it hopefully helps us be better partners to the companies that we ultimately end up working with as we just understand the industries that they operate in more deeply. And then for myself, I'm personally focused on leading our supply chain software roadmap, and I'm also focused on our B2B marketplaces and our cybersecurity roadmaps as well.
Gotcha. And just to scope us in specifically, you and your team, stage of interest and or check size, anything like that to scope in more, or is it generally broad for you?
Yeah, a good question. So I'd say the vast majority of the checks that we write are at that kind of Series A and Series B stage. The check size is very flexible, honestly, but call it, you know, 10 to 25 million in terms of checks on average. But at the same time, you know, we're actively involved in a lot of kind of late seed rounds as well, and so we're happy to go, particularly in the areas where we have deep roadmap expertise. We're happy to go much earlier.
Right on. Yeah, helpful to just scope in for those founders who are listening. And to the point of being thematic and you know, putting forward that content and where you're looking to go find interesting opportunities, let's kick the chat off where you and I have discussed, you know, multiple chats around the innovation going on in supply chain, however we want to define that. But late last year, you really took it to the next level with that BVP content roadmap for supply chain software. And I will link this in the episode for all the listeners to check out, but it was great content. And I thought it did a great job landscaping what's become a pretty active ecosystem. So all that said, could you share the backstory with everyone on how you got hooked on the category, why you then decided to write up the content, and ultimately what is that thesis? This makes this an appealing category for you in the VC asset class.
Absolutely. So I initially got interested in supply chain about 2 years ago through the work we were doing around B2B marketplaces. And we had just started encountering many logistics-focused marketplaces. And as we started digging in and doing some of our diligence around those platforms, really like our eyes were opened to the much larger opportunities around just supply chain software and digitization in general. And so not being deep supply chain experts at that point, we decided to go off and actually do our homework, try to get ourselves up to speed and formulate a view on the industry. And so this started with a 6-month deep dive, talking to experts, meeting as many companies as we could, and talking to as many end users as we could meet, and then really starting to craft a thesis on the space. And so now we're 2 years later. I think we're still learning a lot, frankly, but we have a much better view on the industry and at least the areas where we're excited to be investing. And if I had to just summarize the thesis at a really high level, there's a couple bullet points I'd touch on, which are, you know, first, this won't be a surprise to your listeners, but supply chain is an absolutely massive market at $10 trillion plus, representing over 10% of the global economy. And this puts on par with some of the largest industries on the planet, like healthcare and financial services. But even compared to those, I think supply chain logistics in many ways still lags behind substantially in terms of just technological adoption. And so I think there's huge opportunities to continue investing in technology for the category. The second is, we always ask ourselves this question when we start a new roadmap, like, what's the why now for us? Why are we so excited to be investing in supply chain today? And the answer there, really, I think there's these two primary drivers we've been watching. First, there's the massive shocks to global supply chains that we've seen over the past few years, which everyone's familiar with. And those have had the result, we believe, of making supply chain resilience a C-suite priority for the first time. And so as a result, we think we're going to see many large enterprises substantially increasing the budgets and investments in supply chain digitization. And then the second trend is just the kind of slow but steady evolution and emergence of cloud-based middleware products and solutions that are helping to aggregate data from what has traditionally been many, many siloed data sources across the life of a supply chain. And so we think the result of having these cloud-based middleware platforms available now is it's making it much easier for startups to build modern application layer software that actually taps into this data and helps to make decisions based on it.
Absolutely. Then, go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'd mention on that is just, you know, those are the drivers that have us really excited, and you know, we're kind of broadly exploring all categories within supply chain software. But in particular, I think the areas where we've been most excited over the past year have been around workflow automation, decision optimization, and then anything around digital connectivity, both in terms of data flows and commerce flows as well.
Gotcha. And I want to come back to that categorization as well, but couldn't agree with you more on the budgets opening up. All the catalysts, again, globally, we could talk about. But I do believe it's finally, at the CEO level, supply chain is no longer a cost center. It is a revenue driver, and it is now household dinner issues. You cannot get the parts and things you need as a consumer. So I do think that was a big inflection point that's only going to accelerate it further going into 2023. But back to the categorization, a part of what you guys did in that report is map the market, which is always a struggle. In the word supply chain can be adopted in so many forms and fashions. Some people run off and just call it logistics. You know, there's other ways people interpret it. But I'm curious, to the point of those categorizations, how did you guys decide to frame in that map? What was the thinking, and what were those categories y'all defined?
Yeah, I think, you know, at a high level, one of the lenses that we used when we were looking at this is we said we wanted to focus on categories where we felt like BVP in particular has deep expertise and deep history, which is often around enterprise software, vertical SaaS, and digital infrastructure. And so to be fair, our market map was specifically focused on kind of more of those enterprise software solutions. We didn't, it's no slight to any of these companies, but we specifically were not focused on kind of tech-enabled services or any sort of more kind of capital-intensive fulfillment-based solutions. And then in terms of the way we categorized it, I mean, we really, as you say, there's a million ways to slice this. I think we really tried to focus on the way that the value that end practitioners were getting from these platforms. And so whether that be perceived as a workflow automation platform, a decision optimization platform, or simply just a data connectivity platform, those are the ways that we came up with the language. In the end of the day, I think these companies will all end up overlapping a lot more. And so it's going to be increasingly harder to draw clear boundaries around them.
Yeah, it's already started. And I completely agree. And I love it. It's a great point. And as we recruit more investors into these, you called it 10 plus trillion. I can't believe we don't have more focusing on it, but leverage your background and what you are investing in and apply it to your own thematic outlook, which again, I think you guys did in your write-up really, really beautifully. And so maybe then I'll ask this question about getting more and more investors. Although I do think circa 2015, 17, we've seen a lot of activity here. Your portfolio company, Shippo CEO, Lor Wu, said supply chain tech will be the next fintech. Funds that don't have a thesis there yet will have to catch up. I'm a biased audience, so I completely agree with Laura. But why do you think, with as big a market, the pain points that are just unbelievable, even over the last 2 years of acceleration, why has there been somewhat of a relative lag, if you will, in VC specialization specifically to focus on supply chain deals? Anything like that? Because I say that healthcare, consumer products, et cetera, they all have a supply chain of you design a product, you build it, you distribute, and you operate a physical good in the real world. So it seems like everyone should have a specialization here. But what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a really good observation and a totally fair question. Honestly, I can't speak for other investors, but here are just two of my thoughts. I mean, first, in fairness, it is a really daunting industry, just given the sheer size and complexity. And so I think for somebody who may be more of a generalist, early stage investor to kind of feel like they can come in and wrap their arms around the industry, that's a big task. And I would imagine most venture investors are looking at it similar to the way they would see healthcare or financial services, a fintech, where the best, the world-class investors in fintech and healthcare, it's all they do. They're deeply focused on just that. And so I think probably for a lot of VCs, they're facing the question of, is this a category that we want to devote as much resources to as we are some of these other really large verticals? I think the other part of the driver, if I had to guess, is that while we've had lots of big supply chain software companies built over many years, I think in terms of the kind of true modern venture-backed supply chain companies that we were looking at over the past decade or so, there's been a limited number of like recent big wins, IPOs, things like that that have, that would be really splashy wins for the industry. And I absolutely think they're on the way, but somewhat paradoxically, I think a lot of, when we see more of those companies have really big exits, that will surely attract more VCs to the category, even if they are arriving, 10 years too late to the party. I think that's ultimately the type of activity that tends to draw in more investors to a category like this.
That's a great point. Absolutely needs to be an incentive there. And, equally to the folks that are biased to supply chain, we need the fintech investors or the developer tools investors, because it takes all boats to float. What are these industries that need innovation quickly? So it's my poor recruiting flag here for that section. But with that, I'll move us forward here. And aligned to this, the topic and category of supply chain, let's next chat about what I think is a really incredible intersection of thought leadership, again, from BVP, regarding your history and expertise with the business model context of vertical SaaS. I think it's very true that a lot of innovation that has been successful in the supply chain so far has taken a vertical SaaS go-to-market approach that another piece of your content outlines in great detail. You guys refreshed this summer an article called 10 Lessons from a Decade of Vertical SaaS. We could spend way more than an hour unpacking each of those 10 lessons, but would love for you to walk us through some of the more salient intersection points of that research, as well as our discussion here about supply chain software. Was curious which ones you'd highlight.
Yeah, I agree. We could absolutely talk about this for more than an hour, but I'll try to spare you and just highlight, you know, the three that I think are most relevant. And so those would be first, just the strategies that we've seen successful for vertical SaaS companies in capturing dominant market share in an industry. Second being strategies for layering on additional value-added services over time to build that layer cake of revenue. And then third, opportunities to build vertical specific data businesses. And so let me just try to touch on each of these quickly.
Those are three great ones. Let's do it.
Awesome. So on the first piece, you know, I think some of the strategies that we've seen, or one of the keys that we've seen for vertical SaaS companies in establishing dominant market share and market leadership in a vertical has really been by attacking an underserved market or an underserved process early on. And so I think this is certainly the case with companies like Mindbody selling software into yoga studios early on, and Procore and construction. These were all segments that, you know, at the time, certainly most folks would have told you were pretty unattractive segments to be selling software into. But similarly, you know, when we look at supply chain, you know, I'm excited about many of the companies that are attacking some of the most underserved segments of this industry. You know, as an example, I think traditional wisdom in supply chain would probably tell you that you need to be able to tap into the really large enterprise shipper budgets to make real money. But we're increasingly seeing companies that are focused on selling into carriers or service providers, freight forwarders as their initial wedge market. And I think that gives them a real advantage in being able to build a business that's highly tailored for those underserved markets. And of course, eventually we expect that they'll be able to expand into some of the other adjacent categories like shippers. So that's one that I think we're going to continue to see mm-hmm. companies leverage. On this, the second trend of just companies building, you know, a layer cake of services or revenue over time, this is really like the headline story for most successful vertical SaaS companies when they reach, you know, maturity. And that is, you know, most of them start with a core piece of software that's critical to their customers. And then they pretty quickly add on adjacent services and financial products as well. And so, you know, companies like Toast are a great example, starting with core point of sales software, and then quickly adding on payments, lending, payroll, and you name it. Pretty quickly, they expand to offer a whole range of software and services that becomes this like one-stop shop for their end customer. And many of these companies, like by the time that they're going public, software may actually just be, you know, maybe less than 50% of their overall revenue. And so we do think this is a really powerful driver for many vertical SaaS companies as they scale, but often comes much later in the life of these companies that these other services really kick in a big way. So I think this playbook is very relevant to supply chain. We're already seeing it applied in a lot of subsectors within the supply chain. I mean, just one example being the companies that are going after providing a suite of back office software and services to small trucking carriers, for instance, where they're providing factoring and insurance and fuel cards and leasing, et cetera. I do think it's, you know, I'd highlight that the playbook needs to be tailored a little bit for supply chain, where most of the payments are B2B payments. So they don't come with the opportunity to monetize, say, consumer credit card payments the way that many other prominent vertical SaaS companies have been able to monetize them. That being said, I think we're seeing a bunch of really interesting ways that companies are starting to monetize B2B payment flows and financial services, whether it's factoring, lending, payroll, or even just things like enriched or accelerated ACH payments and international payments. There's all sorts of complexities here for companies to solve and build a big business in the process.
Gotcha. Mike, if I could on the second one, maybe before we go to the third one, to the layer cake piece, and we've chatted a little bit about this offline. In the article, it talks exactly what they should be doing. Ask your customers, follow the P&L, you know, draw inspiration from competition and study other verticals, I think are some of the constructs of the layer cake approach. But it equally does a great job saying it can be tempting to go too fast and build too many products concurrently, because you got to start at the, you know, beginning, and then you have to work your way that direction. How do you deal with that healthy tension, you know, with startups sometimes going too fast to the BD or the channel side of things when really they haven't even really got good product market fit with that initial wedge of value? Any words of advice there on when you see the right opportunity to, like, you know, press the gas a little bit faster than maybe the layer cake would allow you?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I mean, particularly for early stage companies, they have to own, the customer with that initial product use case, and particularly in most of these cases, we're talking kind of core system of record or workflow software that becomes super sticky. And that is ultimately the right to win, so to say, for all of these add-on services. Because in many cases, the add-on services that a company may be selling, they could be more commoditized services, but the reason they work so well in this setting is because you already have the customer locked into to this really sticky workflow or system of record software. And so I think if you try to skip ahead and move too fast and miss the mark, or risk missing the mark on getting customers locked into to the workflow software part of things, then you really jeopardize the long-term potential to also own these other add-on services over time. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's easy to look at some of the large companies that have built these layer cakes and aspire to that, but most of them did it over 8 to 10 years. It's certainly not an overnight process.
Yeah, takes time. Great. Well, round us home here on the third one here.
Great. Yeah, I think the last parallel that I've seen is certainly this idea of building vertical specific data businesses. And so we've seen some really valuable data businesses be built in verticals like insurance and commercial real estate, either by providing data pipes for things like pricing and quoting between carriers and agents, or just selling benchmarking and pricing data. And so I think there's some really similar opportunities to build data connectivity businesses in supply chain, whether it be for quoting and booking infrastructure, like our company Cargo One, which has built the digital bookings infrastructure for the air freight industry, or some of the supply chain intelligence businesses that are trying to aggregate valuable data on supply chain dependencies and risks. We think there's just tons of opportunity here to better aggregate this type of data. And I think we're still in the early innings of seeing these businesses evolve.
Right on. Well, all three very salient. And again, I'll make sure and link the article because it's great. And if anyone's building vertical SaaS, it's a must read. Maybe to the point of like building the business the right way. A lot of folks, when they think of vertical SaaS, let's talk metrics and the SaaS napkin. And so, this kind of sub question here with a complete appreciation, is there a difference between early stage investing and when you're more in a growth stage investment cycle? But overall, there is a still in supply chain tech, there sometimes are tougher go-to-market scaling curve challenges than maybe more traditional industries. Say, as example, infrastructure software can go sell directly into a CIO who knows how to buy software, or consumer can be a virality effect, consumers know how to buy, et cetera. And so it's not as simple if you're talking shippers, brokers, carriers, as just pulling out a SaaS napkin framework to singularly evaluate how the merits of that business are scaling in industries that are learning how to go through digital transformation. So, and maybe as an example, I remain convinced in this category, in the early stages, you will see healthy product user engagement data somewhat be a far superior leading indicator to pure SaaS ARR growth metrics as a lagging indicator, because the buying cycles and maturity of software purchasers in these more traditional industries, if you'll call it that, so sometimes just take a little bit longer. So my whole soapbox there, question for you, how do you think overall about, a shop like Bessemer, metric evaluation? You guys are great at knowing the health of a business, and then parlaying some of that into these earlier stage investment opportunities in supply chain, where maybe it does take a little bit longer to get these things ramped up, but when they go, they do go. So hopefully that comes across, and would love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think this is a great point. And as you point out there, we at Bessemer love metrics as much as anyone. So while I am very partial to the SaaS napkin framework that you reference, we've absolutely witnessed exactly what you're talking about here, which is we have seen often in this industry, just procurement cycles take a little longer than some of our other vertical SaaS categories. And even once companies get through procurement, it's not all that uncommon to see lengthy integration and deployment processes. But on the flip side, I think the enterprise deals in this category can be massive. And if you're able to get through the pain of the procurement and the integration to get deeply integrated into companies' supply chain systems of record, your product can become extremely sticky. And so, to that point, we really focus on, I think, similar to what you've mentioned, just the user engagement data. And we want to really reach conviction that the product can provide some sort of strong ongoing ROI that will just make it a must-have product for end customers. And so through that lens, if we can get conviction on the product and the ROI, we tend to be a little bit more flexible on the traditional SaaS metrics early on, as if we have conviction on everything else.
Yeah, I mean, at least from my experience, a former company, Project 44, they paid a lot of dues early going after the carriers and the brokers to get that API call volume going. And that API call volume was a far leading indicator before eventually that triangle of the shippers, where you said the dollars are sitting. It takes time, but man, if it's sticky and you help define that category, to the whole point of venture capital as an asset class, it's a great peg amongst a lot of others out there. Okay, Mike, well, let's, one of the sections our audience loves hearing about is trends and areas that have, call it the fastest moving adoption among some of what we talked about in these broader emerging digital industrial ecosystem supply chain topic of today. So in the section I like to call what's hot and what's hype, what thoughts do you have about which technologies and or innovation approaches are hot and currently being deployed at scale versus maybe some areas of innovation that are promising, but maybe using a Gartner term a little overhyped right now, given the immature commercial readiness? Would love to leave it open-ended for you on what you think's hot and hype.
Yeah, I think one that I think is now hot and may have been hype not that long ago, is really just the maturation of machine learning to a point where we are finally seeing machine learning based applications having a really tangible business impact on a lot of companies in this industry. And so I know we're seeing this firsthand with our company, Vector AI, which is recently rebranded to Raft, but provides workflow automation for the freight forwarding industry. And then similarly, our company Optimal Dynamics, which leverages machine learning for decision optimization in the trucking industry. And I think we are just still in the very early innings of seeing these companies help to transform supply chain operations.
Agreed.
In terms of what I consider hype at the moment, the first thing that comes to mind for me is anything that looks like trying to take some sort of blockchain-based smart contracts approach to replacing traditional documentation and bills of lading that go along with international shipments. And while I think there's certainly opportunity to improve the way that the current systems are working, I've at least yet to see a really credible case for why this industry is in need of a blockchain-based approach for that type of solution.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on the last one. As much as there are definitely technologies that can advance how we operate, I mean, a lot of these legacy industries are just trying to get their SQL databases up and running in the right direction, right? It's hard to just skip over the beginning here, but love it. And maybe then I'll push us forward here to the discussion we always love to bring back to the founders at some point on this podcast, the people in the arena. What words of wisdom would you have for them out there who are thinking about raising venture capital or engaging you guys at BVP? And we always love to split that advice. Give them some keys to success as they kick off things, or maybe any common pitfalls and challenges to avoid as well as they approach these discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of keys to success, I mean, one of the things I really focus on for founders at the early stages is I just advise them to start with small problems that are easy to explain in 1 to 2 sentences. And of course, we all want to be investing in and building, you know, world-changing companies. But I would advise them to try to avoid the urge to get sucked into building a product that is optimizing global supply chains end to end from day one. And instead, really, really try to stay focused, building a product that can solve tactical problems for users in a simple, elegant way that you can explain to your grandparents in 2 minutes. And if you pick your market wisely, there will always be opportunities to expand and grow from that initial wedge. But staying focused early on is just so key to moving quickly and ultimately to delighting customers. And then in terms of potential pitfalls and challenges, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I am focused on when we meet early stage companies is trying to understand how they are going to help to streamline implementation, reduce time to value, and avoid some of these pitfalls around getting stuck in kind of integration purgatory, and really, which can really slow down velocity as well. So anytime that I meet a founder who's got some clever hack or really, really smart approach to dramatically reducing the time to value with the customer, that's something that really catches my attention.
Yeah, that's a great one. Implementation is something to really put a lot of time and energy and effort, making sure you know how you're going to approach these customers for sure. Well, Mike, then we wrap up here, a section we like to call quick hitters, a little bit of a rapid fire Q&A. So if you're ready, we'll jump in.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Number one thing you look for when you evaluating a founder specifically who's going to attack this ecosystem?
Yeah, the number one thing I look for is grit. And honestly, that's probably true of any founders we meet, regardless of the industry. But I think particularly in this industry, you know, it's hard enough to build and scale an early stage company. But I also think this, you know, it takes a lot of determination to work in an industry where you're, you know, going to have to be involved in changing behavior in you know, the ways that people have been conducting their businesses for decades, in many cases. So I think grit is just one of the things that I look for time and time again.
Absolutely have to have grit here. One resource, book, podcast, blog, whatever you'd recommend our audience to follow in the ecosystem.
Yeah, one of the books that I've really enjoyed is a book called The Box by Mark Levinson. And I don't know how widely read this is, but this is the history of the move from bulk container shipping to standardization around the shipping container. And it's, you know, has discussed all the implications that that's had on the global economy. And I know it's not necessarily the most exciting title, but I wouldn't let that fool you. It's actually a pretty fascinating story, and it provides some great insight into just the complexities required to align global supply chain operators around common standards, and at the same time, just the efficiencies that can result from such evolutions.
And critical to how GDP moves. So I appreciate how far down the rabbit hole you've gone. I certainly haven't heard of The Box. I'm gonna look it up after this. I've got to catch up with you now, Mike. One person who should be on the podcast.
Well, since you mentioned her earlier, I would have to say Laura, the CEO and founder of Shippo. I think she would be absolutely great to have on the podcast, and hopefully we can help you get her on.
Right on. She was one of the early folks pioneered in this space. So love it. We'll follow up on that one. And then Mike, best way for folks to reach out to you after the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Email is honestly the best way to reach me. It's first initial last name, mdrosh@bvp.com. And always happy to chat.
Love it. Well, I think our audience certainly can appreciate a guy who's read a book about how shipping containers have become shipping containers and the specifications that go with it, and started his career with tugboats. Mike, all my jokes aside, it's great to have our conversation come online, and certainly I'm still looking forward to finding more stuff to work with you on the supply chain. So appreciate you coming on the pod.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ty. Really appreciate it.